Good afternoon. It's 12 noon on the dot. The Constitutional Rights, Rule of Law, and Government Operations Subcommittee meeting will now come to order. Lexi, please call the roll.
Chair Roach.
Present.
Representatives Bankson.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Brackett.
Here.
Brannon.
Here.
Cross.
Here.
Edmonds. Jacques.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Lopez. Plakin.
Here.
Porras.
Here.
Trunau.
Here.
Waldron.
Here.
Yarkoski. We have a quorum.
We have a quorum. Members, welcome. Please make sure your cell phones are turned off or placed in silent mode. We have 10 bills on the agenda today. We're going to go ahead and get started with House Bill 1615 by Chairman Randy Fine. Chair Fine, you're recognized to explain House Bill 1615.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. HB 1615 would create a nonprofit security grant program for organizations in the state, and that is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, do we have questions on the bill? Questions on House Bill 1615? Seeing no questions, we do have a question. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I had a question about how you came to the grant size amount.
You're recognized, Chair Fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill has no fiscal at present.
Doesn't it?
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. Doesn't it have a grant size between $10,000 and a maximum of $15,000?
You're recognized.
Thank you. As I said, the bill at present is not funded. It has no fiscal. However, in the structure of the program, should it be funded, it was based largely on federal guidelines. There are federal guidelines as well, but this was to do meaningful things, but to make sure all of the money didn't go to one organization. There are about 50 organizations right now that would be eligible under the federal program that does exist, but cannot get funding because they run out of money. So the idea is to not give millions and millions of dollars to one organization, something you all should like. We're going to spread the wealth around.
Thank you.
Chair Fine. Members and questions?
One more question.
You're recognized for one more question, Ranking Member.
Thank you. When you're determining which nonprofit organizations that are at high risk of terrorist attack, walk me through what are the criteria that make them eligible.
You recognize, Chair Fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. We in the legislature will not be determining who gets the grant request. Thank
you. Follow-up?
You recognize for one follow-up.
Thank you. So, yes, we're not going to be determining that, but how would an organization know, hey, I should apply for this grant?
You recognize.
Sure. The guidelines are the same as the Biden program, which exists right now for federal. The reason for this is there is a federal FEMA grant program that this is modeled upon. The challenge is there's not enough money, and about 50 organizations get turned down every year. So it's the same criteria that are used in Biden's program right now.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Members, that concludes questions on the bill. Seeing no amendments on the bill, we're now going to move into public testimony. On the bill, we have one appearance card from Ellen Bogdanoff, Jewish Federation of Florida. She waves in support. Thank you. Seeing no other public testimony, members, we're now in debate on House Bill 16. Members in debate. Seeing no members that wish to debate, Chair Fine, you're recognized to close on your bill. Wave close. Having waved close, Lexi, please call the roll on House Bill 1615.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Trunau?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkoski? Chair Roach?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
Show the bill reported favorably. Thank you, Chair Fine.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, members.
Members, next we're going to hear a committee substitute for House Bill 337 by Representative Fiona McFarland. McFarland, you are recognized to explain committee substitute for House Bill 337.
Greetings again, members. It's great to see you. This morning I'm presenting HB 337, which expands workers' compensation coverage for PTSD treatment to 911 dispatchers and crime scene investigators who are not otherwise covered under first responder status. The bill narrowly takes just these two groups of people and provides insurance coverage for them should the trauma from their job of keeping us safe result in a psychiatric disorder, and that is the bill.
Having explained her bill, members, do we have questions on the bill? No one questions on the bill. Okay, seeing no questions, do we have public testimony on the bill? We do have an amendment on the bill. Representative McFarland, you're recognized to explain amendment barcode 654593.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this amendment just clarifies an improper cross-reference that your staff expertly identified that we made in drafting. It was referring to an inappropriate area of statute for both the first responders, for the first responder status.
Having explained the amendment, members, we're now in questions on the amendment. Seeing no questions on the amendment, is there public testimony on the amendment? Seeing no public testimony, members, we're now in debate on the amendment to the bill. Do we have debate on the amendment? Seeing no debate on the amendment, Representative, you're recognized to close, having waived close on the amendment. All those in favor of the amendment signify so by saying yay.
Yay. Yay.
All opposed, no. Okay, show the amendment reported favorably. We're now going to move into public testimony on the bill. We do have two or three appearance cards, maybe a few more coming in here. We're going to start with Mr. Austin Stowers on behalf of CFO Jimmy Patronis waves in support of the bill. Next, we have Mick McHale, Florida PBA, waves in support of the bill. Thank you. We have Tasha Carter, Office of Insurance Consumer Advocate, waves in support of the bill. Arthur Carby wishes to speak on the bill. You're recognized to speak on the bill, sir. Okay, wishes to withdraw speaker card. Okay, thank you, sir. Showing no other public testimony on the bill, members, we're now in debate on committee substitute for House Bill 337. Members in debate. Representative Cross, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. McFarland. Just wanted to commend you on bringing this great bill forward and recognizing the stress that some of the other folks experience when helping to keep our community safe, and I look forward to voting yes.
Members in debate. Okay, seeing no further debate, Representative McFarland, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, I'll just take a moment to tell you how this bill came to us this session. It was last summer, and I was making the rounds with some of the leaders in my community and was having law enforcement day, met with my police chiefs, and met with my sheriff, who's actually here with me today. And as Sheriff Hoffman always does, he came prepared. And he said, you know what? Our civilian crime scene investigators in this state are not cared for in the same way as our sworn crime scene investigators. And all of you, if you polled your groups back home, I bet this room is 50-50 between whether your police department or your sheriff's office has a civilian crime scene investigator or a sworn crime scene investigator. These guys are doing the same very difficult work, helping to catch the bad guys out there. And sometimes the nature of their work sticks with them, and they carry it with them. And should it result in psychological trauma, my opinion is we should be doing everything we can to help them get this weapon back in shape so they can keep doing their difficult job. So I agreed right then and there to run this bill. Fast forward a couple months, and Hurricane Ian struck Sarasota. And our 911 dispatchers had to sit on the phone with residents of Sarasota County and tell them that because the sustained winds were too high, help was not on the way. And throughout the night, these dispatchers, the only thing they could offer was the solace of their voice. As roofs ripped off, the waters rose. In some cases, we had homes that burned to the ground around them. And it was the comfort of that dispatcher's voice that was the only thing saving them that day. And I got with Sheriff again, and we thought that this is another group that we should expand the mental health care that is so, so important to serving our communities to the dispatchers as well. I'll end there and just round out my close by saying that we've got firefighters here today. We've got sheriffs here this week. We owe a tremendous amount of gratitude and thanks to the people who keep us safe. And keep our families safe back home, and so this bill is for them. With that, I close.
Thank you, Representative. Having closed on her bill, Lexi, please call the roll on committee substitute for House Bill 337.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Horas?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkovsky? Chair Roach?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 14 yeas, 0 nays, just let the record reflect that committee substitute for House Bill 337 has passed favorably. Thank you. Congratulations. Okay, members, next we're going to take up House Bill 7027 by Representative Overdorf. Representative Overdorf, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Members, in 2020, we passed the Clean Waterways Act to address a number of issues relating to water quality and expanded a number of requirements relating to water quality improvement. We expanded requirements for on-site sewage treatment and disposal systems, or OSTDSs, by requiring a remediation plan to be included in the development of a basin management action plan for certain nutrient-impaired waters. This bill ratifies a number of the various rules and is an important step forward in our work to protect the water quality environment. So this is a bill, this is a rule ratification. Thank you, members. That's the bill.
Thank you, Representative. Having explained the bill, members, we're in questions on House Bill 7027. Seeing no questions on the bill, I also see no amendments on the bill. See no amendments on the bill. We're moving to public testimony. Do we have one appearance card from Alex Kernan, Florida Department of Environmental Protection, waves in support of the bill. Thank you. Seeing no further public testimony, members, we're now in debate on House Bill 7027. Members in debate. See no debate. Representative, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Waive.
Having waived close, Lexi, please call the roll on House Bill 7027.
Representatives Bankston?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Chernow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkovsky? Chair Roach?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 14 to 0, let the record reflect that House Bill 7027 has been reported favorably. Congratulations and thank you.
Thank you, members.
Members, we're now going to take up House Bill 1139 by Representative Stevenson. Representative Stevenson, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair Roach, Vice Chair Barnaby, and Ranking Member Joseph. House Bill 1139, State Board Administration. I want to begin by just giving a little background because this is not an area we work in very often. The State Board Administration is responsible for managing investments for the Florida Retirement System, commonly referred to as the FRS Pension Plan, and for administering the FRS Investment Plan. The combined assets of these retirement plans amounts to over $190 billion. The SBA's ability to invest assets is governed by a legal list or pre-approved list of the types of investments and the total percentage that may be invested in each type of investment. Currently, the SBA may invest 20% of any fund in an alternative investment. These are part of the legal or approved, pre-approved investment categories. These alternative investments include such things as private equity funds, venture funds, hedge funds, or distress funds, or a direct investment in a portfolio company through an investment manager. The SBA is also able to invest up to 5% of any fund in an investment not specifically listed on the legal list, provided that such investment that is not publicly traded must first be reviewed by the Investment Advisory Council. This council consists of 9 members appointed by the governor, the attorney general, and the chief financial officer sitting as the trustee of the SBA. The Investment Advisory Council members are required to possess special knowledge, experience, and familiarity with the portfolio management, institutional investments, and fiduciary responsibilities. The SBA does not directly manage the investments for the FRS Investment Fund, but they are responsible for approving investment options and advisors for the plan. House Bill 1139 permits the SBA to invest up to 30% of its investments in alternative investments, an increase of 10%. For any proposed investment activity that is not provided for in the pre-authorized list, the bill removes the prescribed list of information to be provided to the Investment Advisory Council for their review and instead requires a detailed analysis of the investment. The bill also provides that the SBA can develop one or more products to be offered in the FRS investment plan as an alternative to investments offered currently by approved providers. The bill permits the SBA to more cost-effectively finance real estate holdings through the issuance of secured or unsecured financial instruments, borrowings, or similar arrangements directly or through affiliated limited liability entities or joint ventures. The bill contains further provisions that would have enabled the SBA to sell or finance interests in alternative investments through the issuance of securities or additional borrowings For the sake of time, I will not go into them in detail as they are eliminated in the strike all amendment. This bill updates the list of criminal offenses that can result in the forfeiture of assets in the FRS investment plan to conform with those that can be lost under the FRS pension plan. This bill adds to the list of forfeiture criminal offenses to include certain felonies against victims younger than the age of 16, as well as felonies by members who intentionally defraud the public for profit, gain, or advantage through the use of their power and privileges as public officers or employees. Current statute requires the spouse of an investment plan member who is not designated as the primary beneficiary of the investment plan member's account to be notified and acknowledge any such designation. Current statute provides no waiver process in the event that the spouse fails to acknowledge the notification. This bill will allow the member to request the acknowledgement requirements by request of the state board to waive the requirement through an affidavit process, which is currently permitted in the context of the pension plan. And last but not least, the bill makes conforming changes and updates certain out-of-date terminology to reflect current industry terminology by updating the terms corporation to entity and common stock to equity securities. And that is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Having explained the bill, do we have questions on the bill before we take up the strike all? Representative Waldron, you are recognized for a question on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you give a little bit more detail about the information the SBA must report? Now, it seems, in terms of the detailed analysis of the investment, it seems like it's decreased a bit. So if you could just talk about that a little bit.
I recognize.
Thank you. Well, my understanding is before it was like a laundry list, whereas now it will be a detailed analysis. As the Investment Advisory Council has oversight, I'm sure that they can compel whatever detailed information they require for them to make a decision on whether it's appropriate for the SBA.
Questions on the bill before we take up the strike call? See no further questions from members on the bill. Representative Stevenson, I see you have a strike call amendment, barcode 349-599. You are recognized to explain your amendment.
Thank you, Chair Roach. This strike all conforms the House bill to the Senate bill, and specifically the strike all removes a provision that was in the original bill that authorized SBA to use certain subsidiary entities to issue securities and borrow money, and reenacts various sections of the law and makes technical changes. Otherwise, it is consistent with the original bill.
Thank you. Members, do we have questions on the amendment? See no questions on the amendment. I see no public testimony on the amendment. Members, we're now in debate on the strike all amendment. See no debate on the strike all amendment. Let the record show the amendment adopted without objection. Representative Stevens, you're recognized to close on the amendment.
Waive close.
Having waived close on the amendment, let the record reflect that the strike all is adopted without objection. Thank you. We are now going to move into public testimony on the bill as amended. We have one appearance card from Lamar Taylor, State Board of Administration, wishing to... Okay. Thank you. All right, this... I'm sure what to do with this. Thank you. Okay, having waived in support, that concludes public testimony on the bill. Members, we're now in debate on the bill as amended. Debate on the bill as amended. See no debate. You're recognized. Oh, Representative Cross, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just want to thank Mr. Taylor for coming and talking and going through this bill in a very detailed way. I told you by the end of my time on this committee, I'd be able to say things like, we're going to increase our cash yield and get a better return than fixed income, but at fixed income volatility. And I know you're going to get us there, and thank you for that.
Thank you. Members in debate. Seeing no further debate, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the consideration of this bill, and I ask for your favorable support. The objective of this bill is for the State Board of Administration to continue to get the best risk-adjusted yield that they can to protect the assets that are used to pay for our retirees' benefits. And by doing that, that leaves a little extra general revenue for us to meet the other needs of the state. And with that, I close.
Thank you. Having closed, Lexi, please call the roll on House Bill 1139.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brennan?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Flaken?
Yes.
Horas?
Yes.
Chernow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkovsky? Chair Roach?
Yes.
14 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 14 to 0, let the record reflect that House Bill 1139 is reported favorably. Thank you. Congratulations. Next, we're going to take up PCS for House Bill 1121 by Representative Bartleman. Representative Bartleman, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Chair. Over 20,000 FRS employees retire each year in the state of Florida. They have dedicated their lives to serving the state of Florida. They are law enforcement officers, agency staff, and teachers. Community service is in their blood. Upon retirement, many of them look forward to giving back to their community by serving as guardian ad litems, by volunteering in their children's, grandchildren's classrooms, and there are law enforcement officers who want to work with canine dogs and volunteer for reserve officer programs. Currently, these individuals are unable to do so without risking their retirement benefits. This bill remedies the situation by authorizing an FRS employer to establish a post-employment volunteer program that allows retirees to provide civic, charitable, and humanitarian services during their first year of retirement. This is important so that an FRS retiree does not risk their retirement benefits. This bill also specifies clear and careful criteria in which the volunteer program must operate. Members, this is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, we're in questions. Questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, I also see no amendments to the bill. No amendments on the bill. Do we have public testimony? We do have some public testimony on the bill. Ashelle Richardson, Florida Public Defender Association, waves in support of the bill. Wendy Dodge, Polk County Public Schools, waves in support of the bill. Allie Libby Schoonover, Seminole County Public Schools, waves in support of the bill. Mick McHale, Florida Police Benevolent Association, PBA, waves in support of the bill. Jessica Janesowitz, Florida Association of School Administrators, waves in support of the bill. Okay, having concluded public testimony, members, we're now in debate on the bill. Do we have debate on the bill? Seeing no debate on the bill, Representative Bartleman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I would first like to start by thanking Chairman Roach for allowing us to hear this really good bill. I want to thank Eric Miller and his policy staff as well, because the language had to be crafted very carefully so as not to impact FRS. So I'm very confident that this bill is going to do great things for the state of Florida and allow our retirees to continue making a difference in the world. Thank you.
Thank you. Having closed, Lexi, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 1121.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brennan?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Flaken?
Yes.
Horas?
Yes.
Chernow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Chair Roach?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 15 to 0, let the record reflect that PCS for House Bill 1121 is reported favorably. Thank you and congratulations. Members, next up, we're going to take up House Bill 1189 by Representative Salzman. Representative Salzman, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. HB 1189 will be launching pad and to further, will be the launching pad. See, let me start over. We're going to do a fun little thing here. HB 1189 will be the launching pad to further American appreciation and commitment to space exploration. With the Florida Space Exploration Monument, there will be a new star at the Capitol, causing a gravitational pull for American citizens and students. America's contributions to advancements in space are out of this world, and this monument will guarantee that these achievements remain in orbit. It's time to plan it all out and get this monument in the space it deserves. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Having explained the bill, members were in questions on the bill. Do we have questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, I also do not see any amendments on the bill. Seeing no amendments, we're now going to move into public testimony. We have one appearance card from Lindsay Pierce, Space Florida, waving in support of the bill. Thank you. Having concluded public testimony, members were now in debate on the bill. Seeing no debate on the bill, Representative Salzman, you're recognized to close on your bill.
God bless America, Mr. Chair.
Having blessed America and closed on her bill, Lexi, please call the roll on House Bill 1189.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jock?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Horace?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yurkowski?
Yes.
Chair Roach?
Yes.
15 yes, 0.
By a vote of 15 to 0, let the record reflect that House Bill 1189 is reported favorably. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you.
Members, next we're going to take up proposed committee substitute for House Bill 563 by Representative Amnesty. Representative Amnesty, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, Ranking Member, and committee members for the opportunity to present before you all this afternoon. In an era where the Chinese Communist Party and other foreign enemies are increasing their extensive surveillance to gain any possible advantage against the United States, it is crucial to prevent hostile forces from potentially gaining control of social media platforms that can be easily utilized against us. House Bill 563 is a nonpartisan measure, an effective plan of action to safeguard against deceitful digital spying and manipulative activities of authoritarian governments, such as the Republic of China, the Venezuelan regime of Nicolas Maduro, the Republic of Cuba, the Russian Federation, the Democratic Peoples of Republic of Korea, Cuba, the Syrian Arab Republic, and the Islamic Republic of Iran. Highly addictive digital platforms such as TikTok not only obtain vast amounts of private data from Americans, but also can obtain sensitive state information. This bill is exclusively to state-owned services, public Wi-Fi, and virtual private networks utilized on government devices. It allows the Department of Management Services to maintain a specified list and establish procedures for a waiver in case of a state emergency. That is the bill, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Having explained the bill, members were now in questions on the bill. We have a question. Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized in a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Why just TikTok? Some of the criteria you just described also apply to other applications, and some of them are social media and equally addictive.
Representative Amnesty, you're recognized.
Thank you for your question, Representative Joseph. The bill exclusively says any application created by one of these foreign entities, such as the Republic of Cuba, the Republic, the Russian Federation, the Republic of the Chinese Communist Party, and so forth. I've listed them in the presentation. So it's not only exclusive to TikTok, it's all applications created by foreign entities that are a threat to our state security, essentially our national security. Thank you.
Follow-up, Mr.
Thank
Chair.
You. You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. So any application created by a foreign entity, so you're talking about a governmental entity as well as private entities?
You're recognized.
We're discussing foreign entities, specifically government entities. We know that TikTok was created by the Chinese Communist Party. So essentially, it's a private entity created by a government entity, which is a political party. So the bill is very exclusive. Any application created by a foreign entity that has ties to a political party of affiliation that is considered a threat to the United States would be applicable.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. So just to be clear, so it's for a private entity, an application that was created by a private entity that originated with a government entity that is covered by the ones identified.
You're recognized.
So essentially, your question regarding origination, it has nothing to do with origination. It can be a private entity that created an application, but that private entity has ties to a foreign entity, which in essence is a government that could be considered a threat to the United States.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. So I just want to make sure, I understand what you're trying to accomplish with the bill. Got that, no problem. I'm trying to make sure we're not capturing other applications that may have originated from some of those countries that can arguably not be tied to espionage or any of that kind of stuff. You know, let's say it's a picture-taking app or a editing app that is not directly tied to those things. Does your bill capture those kinds of applications as well?
Recognized.
If you see section 32 to 39 on the bill, it's very specific. Any application that has ties to these foreign entities, such as the Russian Federation, the Republic of China, and are considered a threat to our national security would be applicable. So it has to be one of these countries mentioned, and second, it would have to be considered a threat to our national security. So there would have to be an algorithm that's specifically to spying, collecting data, and so forth.
Follow-up, Mr. Chair.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. So the second component of what you said, considered a threat to national security, how is that determined in the algorithm?
Mr. Chair.
You're recognized.
Well, it's very specific. If you have an application that's created by an entity that's a threat to our national security, such as the Russian Federation, and this application collects data, violates privacy, and so forth, I think that's the definition of a threat to our national security. And it's very specific in this bill.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
We're going to come back to you in just a second, but Representative Amosy, congratulations. You've woken the committee up. We have a few more questions for you. Representative Brunow, you're recognized in questions.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, who is in charge of collecting this data?
You're recognized.
The Department of Management Services would determine specifically the list of applications that would fall under this statute.
Follow-up?
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. Representative, and how will they distribute that information to us?
You're recognized.
They would list it on their website, and they would have a specific list and would give us approximately 15 days to remove these applications from state-owned devices.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lopez, you're recognized in questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good afternoon, Rep.
Good afternoon.
Amosy, thank you so much for reaching out to me and try to clarify questions. I highly appreciate that as well. So I have a few questions. For example, what security risk have you seen on these applications in order to push you to introduce this bill?
You're recognized.
Well, I think this bill is very common sense. We see it all over the country right now, even on the federal level. This is a nonpartisan issue. We see that the Biden administration recently just claimed that TikTok, the FBI also confirmed it, it's a risk to our national security. TikTok is owned by the Chinese Communist Party, and there are other applications as well that could potentially fall into this jurisdiction. For such, I think it's common sense that we protect state-owned devices. Once again, we're not getting involved in privacy. Anyone in our state that would like to utilize TikTok, they can. But this is specific to state-owned devices, which would be considered the laptops that we've been given by the Florida House would fall into this jurisdiction. We don't want the Chinese Communist Party, the Russian Federation, the Republic of Cuba, the Arab Islamic State. We don't want them having access to our state security and information and data. So I think this is a very common sense approach.
Thank you. You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you have any solid evidence of cyber espionage or research on how they have collected keystrokes from American citizens?
You're recognized.
Representative Lopez, I really appreciate your question, but if you essentially just go on Google and you put TikTok and the threat of national security, you can find a lot of articles and data that really backs this policy. Again, it's a nonpartisan issue. We've seen the Biden administration right now is banning TikTok on a federal level. This is common sense. This policy is exclusive to state-owned devices. Let's protect our state security and information.
Mr. Chair, do you have any example?
Recognized.
I'm more than happy to send to your office an email with a lot of articles and information. The FBI recently came out and provided a statement saying TikTok is owned by the Chinese Communist Party. There are also other applications that potentially could fall under this jurisdiction. It's a risk for our state security. It's a risk for our national security. And when you have the FBI and the Biden administration, the executive branch, the judicial branch, the legislative branch of the United States of America saying this is a threat to our national security, I think it's imperative for on a state level for us to protect our state-owned devices. That's why we're here, to protect our state.
Okay, with that, we're going to turn it back over to Ranking Member Joseph for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can hear your passion about the bill. I don't think anybody's questioning the motive. We're just, I think she might have some questions about what information you have. If you have it, you have it. If you don't, no problem. My question for you is, how do you determine ties to the government when it's a private corporation? What criteria do you use to identify those?
You're recognized.
Well, Section 40 on the bill clearly states any foreign principal could be a government entity. It could also be a partnership, an association, or a corporation, or an organization that has ties to a foreign entity or a political party. A great example is TikTok. It's a private-owned entity, but it has ties, direct ties to the Chinese Communist Party, which in essence is a foreign entity, which is a threat to our national security.
We're going to shift back to Representative Lopez for another question. Representative Lopez, you're recognized for another question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. From line 82 to 84, it reads that block all prohibited applications from public access of on any virtual private network that it owns, operates, or maintains. Can you clarify this for me, please?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lopez, VPNs are something that are utilized to ensure and we protect our networks. For example, right now on your laptop, you have a VPN installed in order to access state information, for example, the Wi-Fi, your emails, and so forth. So if you're on a private device where you're utilizing a public VPN, like the House VPN, you would be prohibited of utilizing TikTok. So any public state-owned devices, for example, a VPN, public Wi-Fi, state-owned devices, wireless, so forth. So that's what's pertaining to that section that you've mentioned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Ranking Member, did you have another question or you're recognizing questions?
Thank you. So I know you said has ties to, and I looked at the section, but that's what I'm asking you. What constitutes a tie? Just the fact that the developer lived in the country at the time they developed the application? I guess I'm just concerned about it potentially being overbroad. So there could be a research application or a design application that is not directly tied to national security. I'm just trying to understand the interaction with your bill. So you said has ties. I'm asking you what constitutes a tie? Is it a third generation Russian who has been living in the United States their entire life who creates something has a tie? That's what I'm trying to understand. What constitutes has a tie?
Representative Amesty, you're recognized to answer the question about what constitutes
Chair.
A tie. We'll leave out the hypothetical about the third generation Russian, but you're recognized to answer the question, what constitutes a tie to a foreign government?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Specifically, what constitutes a tie is bilateral relation between the application and a foreign entity that's listed. For example, if someone is born in Venezuela, that's not a specific tie to the Venezuelan government. However, if you are a businessman that does business with the Venezuelan regime and you have direct ties to its dictatorship, its political affiliation, its political organizations, its party, an association that was created by this foreign entity, which is the Venezuelan regime of Nicolás Maduro, then you would be applicable to this definition of ties. It's a bilateral relationship between the corporation and the foreign entity. And it's very specific. We're not talking about being born in the country. We have great people in the business community that were born in Venezuela and China and the Republic of Cuba and so forth. That's not what it's being directed. It's saying ties, which means a bilateral relation on the commercial side with these foreign entities and political affiliations. I hope I've answered your question.
Okay, we're going to shift over to Vice Chair Barnaby for a question. Vice Chair, you're recognized for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Rep. Amnesty, thank you for bringing this very important bill. My question is, on the state level, we have several different intelligence agencies. And on the, with this particular bill, is there a particular intelligence agency at the state level that is tasked with the oversight over situations like these where we may be compromised by a foreign agent, outside source? Is there an agency in the state of Florida that is tasked with this?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Bartomey, for your question. Specifically, I would say it's a partnership between the state and the federal government, but in essence, the bill would prohibit the use of these applications on state-owned devices and would allow the Department of Management Services to pretty much allow a waiver. So for in essence, if there's a state of emergency and there's a specific state agency that needs to utilize TikTok for an investigation or for a declaration of state of an emergency, then they would be able to apply for this waiver and utilize the application. So there are methods in the policy that are very clear that if we need to utilize TikTok for an investigation, an emergency, they can do so. I don't believe on a state level we actually have an agency that does some type of protecting, trying to figure out if there's an espionage and so forth. That's more of the federal level, but we are working with the federal level in regards to protecting our state security.
Vice Chair, you're recognized for follow-up.
Yes, I was wanting an answer more in line with does an agency like FDLE has a branch that would handle something like this? I know that there are law enforcement agencies, you may not be aware, that do handle certain intelligence issues. I have a family member who's in intelligence work. Maybe we haven't had it disclosed here, but they're doing certain things to protect us.
Recognize.
Well, thank you for the family member that's protecting all of us here in the intelligence community. So FDLE does have a department, but specifically that's more of the federal government's talking about espionage and so forth. But the bill protects and allows those state agencies that are in the intelligence units that perhaps have an overlap or they should work with the federal level that they can utilize TikTok to investigate or perhaps even declare a state of emergency, because we saw during COVID that TikTok was utilized to promote health awareness and so forth. So there is a specific terminology in the statute that would allow these agencies to use it for investigation purposes and also the method of bringing awareness.
Thank you. We're going to go back to the ranking member for one final question. Ranking member, you're recognized. Questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your description of bilateral as the ties, the requisite ties for the bill. So I looked at, I think, the section where it defines what a foreign principal is, and the part that you were talking about, political party and the partnership, is in 2 and 3, but I was really concerned about number 4. So number 4 reads, any person who is domiciled in a foreign country of concern and is not a citizen of the United States. So if somebody is living there temporarily, not related to the government, not tied to the government, but they happen not to be a U.S. citizen, so let's say, I don't know, they might be Canadian doing research on something there or trying to figure out what's actually going on with the COVID-19 virus, and they're living there trying to do research, and there's an application that they're using either for educational, health, or whatever purposes, would they be captured by your bill?
You're recognized.
That is not the intent of the bill. Specifically, what you've mentioned, a Canadian talking about research and so forth on the educational side, that's not the intention of the bill. It's specific to those applications that have algorithms of surveillance, violation of privacy data, and they are a threat of national security. So, for example, we have a foreign Russian individual living in China creating an application that is part of an organization that has ties to the Chinese Communist Party. That person, that application would be applicable to this statute.
Members, we're going to move on to amendments on the bill. Seeing no amendments on the bill, we're now going to move into public testimony on the bill. We do have two appearance cards. Mr. Sal Nuzzo, James Madison Institute, wishes to appear in person. Mr. Nuzzo, if you're present, you're recognized. I do not see Mr. Nuzzo in the audience. Let the record reflect he is a proponent of the bill. Next, we have Mr. Barney Bishop, Florida Smart Justice Alliance, wishes to speak in person. Mr. Bishop, you're recognized to speak on the bill.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. It's funny because Representative Amnesty has used the word common sense many times, and that's the first thing that comes to my simple mind about this bill. First off, thank you so very much for bringing this bill. This is, there's not much that I agree with personally with the Biden administration, but this is one place where the Biden administration finally got it right. We're talking about an enemy threat. Probably the most important threat to the United States is China and the Chinese Communist Party. When you want to see evidence about any espionage or spying, you're not going to get that. You know why? Because the intelligence agencies aren't going to divulge that information to you. It would undermine how they collect the information. It would undermine what information is get collected, who the agents are potentially. There's not going to be any evidence. And the FBI and the Biden administration have agreed that this is something that should be not on federal phones. And representatives, there isn't a single solitary reason to not do the same thing on state phones. This is a very narrowly drawn bill. It's not overly broad. Your intent is very clear from your testimony here. Smart Justice asks you to support this very, very important bill. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Bishop. Having concluded public testimony, members, we're now in debate on PCS for House Bill 563. Yes, you're recognized in debate, Rep. Waldron.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Sure. I just want to say thank you for bringing this bill. I think it's an important bill. And I know that my colleague here asked some questions about some of the statistics and examples. And I can tell you that from what my research says, the FBI opens a new China counterintelligence investigation every 12 hours, and they have 2,000 active investigations, not including cyber theft, going on. Our state, Florida, is also the number one state, and it's been number one for 14 years for the greatest amount of foreign purchases of our land. And I think we have close to 1% of that is from China. So I'm all for this bill. I think it is absolutely a bipartisan bill. You mentioned President Biden. As you know, last September, he signed that executive order, specifically the executive order to give more teeth to the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S. to pursue transactions, and that was related specifically to TikTok. So I'm supporting this bill, and thank you for bringing it to me, to us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Cross, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Rep. Amnesty. I just wanted to circle back on some of the concerns that some of my colleagues expressed. The language about any person who is domiciled in a foreign country of concern and is not a citizen of the U.S. on lines 49 through 50, I think maybe that could be tightened up a little bit to ensure that we are not limiting apps that may be helping in our government operations. I support the intent of this bill. I'm going to vote up on it today, but I would appreciate if you'd be able to make sure that we're not inadvertently excluding some apps that would actually be beneficial and not collecting harmful data. Thank you.
Representative Lopez, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even though I feel kind of disrespected with the word common sense and sending me to look into the internet, I want to applaud you for proposing this bill that even our President Biden is proposing at a national level. And for this reason, I'm going to vote in favor of this bill, and also encouraging all of my colleagues to do the same thing. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Representative Lopez. We're now going to recognize Representative Jacques in debate. You're recognized, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Rep. Amnesty, for bringing this great bill forward. You know, the Chinese communists, they're truly the scourge of the earth. And anything we can do to limit their foothold here in our country and in our state through these digital apps like TikTok is a commendable effort. And I applaud you in that, and I urge my colleagues to vote yes on this measure. Thank you.
Thank you. Ranking Member Joseph, take us home in debate.
I wanted to thank you for the bill. I think maybe I pay attention to details, but also I think maybe in your passion, it came off a certain way because I did notice the exchange between you and a couple of representatives in questions, and I don't think the questions were directed to challenge you in any way. It was
really just...
Keep
it on the substance of the bill, please. Keep
understood.
Bill.
But to just really get to the heart of the matter. So that being said, I do applaud your efforts to rein in some of these concerns that have been identified specifically with the... So for the benefit of some of the other members, at lines, let's say, 59 through 73 of the bill... 58 through 73 of the bill, you do tailor and narrow in what applications are captured, but it does say but not limited to. So just as you're thinking about this for the next committee stops, making sure that it doesn't leave it open to interpretation. I understand that DMS is going to be the one regulating this at some point, so that it doesn't capture those kind of nuanced things, and it only captures what you're intending it to capture, which I think right now it's fair enough to. So I will definitely be up on the bill, and I thank you for it, because we do need to make sure that we're protected. Just the very fact that some of these applications have one version for the United States and another version for their own countries is problematic, and we're definitely seeing the impact on our children. So thank you for the bill. Look forward to seeing it go along.
Members, having concluded debate, Representative Amesty, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Definitely, I appreciate the concerns and questions asked by Representative Lopez and Joseph. Definitely was not my intent to come across such extensive on the debate, but nonetheless, foreign policy is a passion of mine. National security, state security is definitely very dear to my heart. While these adversaries continue to grow and prosper, we must take this initiative to protect against foreign risks currently, like is the application as TikTok. So that being said, I truly hope to count with your support, and I close on this bill.
Having closed on the bill, Lexi, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 563.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkovsky?
Yes.
Chair Roach?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
Let the record reflect that by a vote of 15 to 0, PCS for House Bill 563 is reported favorably. Thank you and congratulations. Members, next we're going to move to House Bill 1239 by Representative Griffiths. Sir, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate you putting us on the agenda today. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Vice Chairman Barnaby, and Ranking Member Joseph. This is House Bill 1239, or simply the Buy American Bill. The bill simply states that any iron or steel that is used in a public works project in Florida must be manufactured in the United States. That is the bill, sir.
Having explained the bill, members, we're now in questions on House Bill 1239. Representative Trunow, you are recognized in questions on the bill.
Thank you, Chairman. Representative, how many manufacturers of steel do we have in the state of Florida?
There are a handful. I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. There are a handful, but there is a large one in the state that has enough supply for the entire state to, so no supply chain issues would be affected.
Follow up. Representative Edmonds, you're recognized. The question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Griffiths. I think this is a great bill. I just want to know if there was a reason why we limited it to only iron and steel.
You're recognized.
Thank you. Going back to 1933, there's a federal law. This mirrors some of the federal law that talks about buying American products. And so this limited it to simply public works projects. We could expand that, but I think relative to the conversation with the what we heard in the previous bill with China, China is the largest exporter of iron and steel in the world. So we need to make sure that none of that is being used in our public infrastructure projects.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, further questions on the bill? Ranking Member Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My only question has to do with the exceptions. I was looking at the exceptions for the bill, and I was trying to understand. I understand supply and cost, but what about the public interest? What public interest considerations would lead to an exception for this bill?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Ranking Member. If you notice, we have electrical components in there as well. So critical infrastructure, I think, would be a key component where if we had to go outside the guardrails in this bill. So, for instance, if electrical transformers, power supply, that type of thing, it would give the options to make sure that we have those options available for us.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Thank you. How is that different than, maybe I'm misunderstanding the supply exception then?
Well,
recognized.
Supply, thank you, Mr. Chair, I apologize. Supply chain issues obviously can be a challenge. We've noticed those over the last few years. But I think what we in Florida experience with natural disasters, we have to be prepared and have to be able to pivot quickly as a state. And so I think that's why we included some of those components in there.
Thank you.
Vice Chair Barnaby, you are recognized for questions, sir.
Thank you. Representative Griffiths, thanks for the bill. My question is, have we looked at how this would impact our automotive industry and our aerospace industry in terms of manufacturing in our state, particularly in our state?
You're recognized.
No, sir, we haven't, because those typically, I was looking at public infrastructure projects with Space Florida. That is a very good question, and I will circle back with you and get some answers for that. That's a great question. Thank you.
I would appreciate it. Thank
yes,
you.
Sir.
Members, seeing no further questions on the bill, I also see no amendments on the bill. Seeing no amendments on the bill, we're going to move into public testimony on the bill. We have quite a bit here. We're going to start with Ms. Sabrina Sanderwhite. Let the record reflect that she is a proponent of the bill. She wishes to speak on the bill. Ma'am, you are recognized to speak on the bill.
Thank you, Chair. In 2016, I brought this to the D.C. Congress because we have been getting subpar steel in our industries that were flooded from places like China. Now, in the 40s and 50s, we were at the height of steel manufacturing here in the United States. We had 200 smelting places, and we are down to 10 in 2020. So I have a concern with Section 2B, 1 and 2, just like Representative Joseph, that this wouldn't do enough to allow American manufacturers to produce the quantities we need in the state and beyond. That's all I have.
Thank you, ma'am. And it just, we're gonna let a ranking member ask you a question, but before that, are you representing an organization or an agency?
I'm representing myself, but I am also a machinist, part of the Machinist Union. So okay. I'm also a Department of Defense employee, so I work for the federal government.
Thank you. Ranking member, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you. I wanted to make sure I understood what your concern was with Section 2B. What do you think, you said you're concerned it's not enough. What do you think is missing to make it enough?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. In Section 2B, line 66, for anybody who's looking, is Section 2. But if you go into the iron and steel, products produced in the United States are not produced in sufficient quantities. Well, we have a lower amount of people who actually do smelting. So that's like bar stock coming from iron ore. We have a huge industry. It's 112 about specialty mills or mini mills, what they call them, that do recycled ore, recycled steel, which could actually be a big industry for Florida because lots of people would like to recycle. But because of that, it makes buying from an American company more expensive. There's really only two major producers, U.S. Steel and Cleveland Cliffs Mills, that own and operate five each major steel mills in the United States.
Follow up?
You recognize.
So what in the bill would need to be changed to address your concern?
I would rather see this bill have more of a direct impact on either specialty mills that we have here in the state of Florida that should be able to recycle and reuse for a lot of applications, or require those to require the use of the ability to use those two. They're two major mills, but those two major mills produce all the steel in the United States. Other than that, we're getting it from other countries anyway. So we're not saving any money in each one of these sections. A and B would apply to anything that's bought in the state of Florida.
Thank you very much for sharing your expertise with the committee.
Thank you.
Next, we have Stephanie Jesse, who let the record reflect she is an opponent of the bill, representing herself. We have Ms. Carrie Heaprank, National Utility Contractors Association of Florida, wishes to speak in person. I do not see Ms. Heaprank, but let the record reflect that she is an opponent of the bill. Chris Strandberg, Americans for Prosperity, waves in opposition to the bill. Vincent Chesnes, representing himself, waves in support of the bill. Looks like Cheney or Cherry George waves in support of the bill. Miriam Baker waves in support of the bill. Lindsay Grigsby waves in support of the bill, representing herself. Andy Starling waves in support of the bill. William Lawson waves in support of the bill. Sean Donnelly waves in support of the bill, representing Central Florida Electrical Apprenticeship. Richard Gillon waves in support of the bill. Diane Jones waves in support of the bill. Cassandra Beltran waves in support of the bill. Eric Gosnell waves in support of the bill. Scott Williamson waves in support of the bill. Stephen Simon waves in support of the bill. O.D. Elliott waves in support of the bill. Glenda Abite waves in support of the bill. Robert Arnold waves in support of the bill. John O'Brien, representing himself, waves in support of the bill. Lonnie Mathis waves in support of the bill. Thomas Newton waves in support of the bill. Rachel Schaffer waves in support of the bill. Jeff Estes waves in support of the bill. Dylan Owens waves in support of the bill. Mitzi Martinez waves in support of the bill. Members, that concludes public testimony on the bill. We're now in debate on House Bill 1239. Members wishing to debate. We're now in debate. Seeing ranking member wishes to debate, you are recognized.
I just want to congratulate you on edging out Bartleman in the highest number of like public comment on the bill in support. I'm happy to support the bill today. Thank you for bringing it.
Okay, members, further debate? Seeing no further debate, Representative Griffiths, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Ranking Member. Obviously, I wish these were all voters as well, but with that, I close. Thank you.
Okay, having closed on the bill, Lexi, please call the roll on House Bill 1239.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Clayton?
Yes.
Horace?
Yes.
Trunow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkoski?
Yes.
Chair Roach?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
Thank you, Lexi. Let the record reflect that by a vote of 15 to 0, House Bill 1239 passes favorably. Thank you and congratulations.
Thank you, members.
Members, next we're going to take up proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1109 by Vice Chair Barnaby. Vice Chair, you are recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, or good afternoon, I should say, Chair and Ranking Member Joseph and the committee. Last year, the legislature passed HB 317, quote, substitution of work experience for post-secondary requirements, end quote. House Bill 317 codified that agencies may substitute work experience for post-secondary educational requirements. Members, the bill HB 1109 creates the, quote, Expanding Public Sector Career Opportunities Act, end quote. This bill codifies that public employees may not deny any applicant merely for lack of post-secondary educational requirements and applies to state agencies, counties, municipalities, and school districts. The bill provides a correlation of different post-secondary degree levels and the direct work experience substitutes that are permitted. If the public employer substantiates the need for a particular post-secondary degree as necessary for the specific position or contract, direct experience may not be substituted for such required degree as in architecture or engineering. Public agencies are authorized to use the same correlation of post-secondary degrees for required experience when procuring contractual services. That is the bill.
Having explained the bill, members, we're now in questions on the bill. Members in questions. Seeing no questions on the bill, I also see no amendments on the bill. Seeing no amendments, members, we're moving to public testimony. We have two appearance cards. Chris Strandberg, Americans for Prosperity, let the record reflect that he is a proponent, and he is here and wishes to speak in person. Mr. Strandberg, you are recognized, sir.
We're working better now? Excellent.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. I'll keep it brief. My name is Chris Strandberg. I'm the Legislative Affairs Director for Americans for Prosperity Florida. I want to thank Vice Chair Barnaby so much for bringing this great bill. This bill really just keeps the free state of Florida a land of opportunity for all of our citizens, both current citizens and those that are coming in, allowing them to work in their community and for their community, and eliminating a lot of the governmental barriers. We ask for your favorable support, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, sir. We have an appearance card by Amanda Prater, waves in support of the bill. Members, that concludes public testimony. We're now going to move into debate on House Bill 1109. Representative Lopez, you are recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Barnaby. Thank you for bringing such an important bill forward. I have always been an advocate for schools and urge all people to pursue their education. However, I understand the financial impact higher education has on some families. And unfortunately, some people in our state cannot afford it, and they're trapped in low-income position their entire lives because they couldn't afford to pay for school or get into severe debt. This bill fixes that. It gives honest, hardworking, and smart people the chance to opt for better paying jobs, save money, and be able to provide an education to their children. I commend you for this initiative, and you can count on my support for this bill, and I also encourage my colleagues to do the same. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Porras, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to thank the Vice Chair for this fantastic bill. As somebody who was, you know, in college and also in a job, for so long we see young people be denied opportunities for in their career just because of the lack of their degree. I think this bill addresses a lot of those concerns and makes sure that we have the most opportunities available for anyone despite, you know, what their background may be. So I want to thank him again, and I'll be up on the bill.
Thank you. Representative Brackett, you're recognized in debate. Okay, having concluded debate by Representative Brackett, other members wishing to debate? Okay, seeing no further debate on the bill, Vice Chairman, you are recognized to close on the bill.
Thank you. I waive close.
Okay, having waived close, Lexi, please call the roll on PCS for House Bill 1109.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Chernow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yurkowski?
Yes.
Chair Roach?
Yes.
15 yeas, 0 nays.
By a vote of 15 to 0, let the record reflect that PCS for House Bill 1109 is reported favorably. Thank you, Vice Chair. Congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Members, next we're going to move to PCS for House Bill 1159 by Representative Yurkowski. We have roughly an hour and a half to debate this bill. Remember, Representative, you're recognized to explain your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Vice Chair and Ranking Member Joseph. This is a great bill. I'm excited about this one. It's a simple bill, actually, and it's fixing something that I say all the time. I can't believe how many times I say in the course of my day, I can't believe we're not doing this already, or I can't believe this, I can't believe that. This would amend Chapter 287 to include limitation of liability language in government contracts. Currently, liability can be unlimited, which discourages best-of-class vendors from pursuing government contracts and jeopardizes small business owners who either cannot compete due to unlimited risk or who do not understand the gravity of the unlimited risk they are undertaking. And that, Mr. Chairman, is the bill. And there is an amendment.
Okay, having explained the bill, members, are there questions on the bill? Members, do we have questions on the bill? Seeing no questions on the bill, I do not see an amendment. Give me 1 second to confer with staff here. I do not see an amendment on the bill. Okay, so there is no amendment that we have on the bill. So seeing no amendments on the bill, we're going to move into public testimony on the bill. We have one. Okay, Ms. Erin Rock, you are recognized. Let's record reflect she's waving in support of the bill. That concludes public testimony. Members, we're now in debate on the bill. Members in debate, we have an hour and 20 minutes to debate the bill. Members in debate. Okay, seeing no takers, you're recognized to close on your bill.
I'll waive close, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Wow, having waived close, Lexi, please call the roll for PCS for House Bill 1159.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Brackett?
Yes.
Brannon?
Yes.
Cross?
Yes.
Edmonds?
Yes.
Jacques?
Yes.
Joseph?
Yes.
Lopez?
Yes.
Plakin?
Yes.
Porras?
Yes.
Chernow?
Yes.
Waldron?
Yes.
Yarkowski?
Yes.
Chair Roach?
Yes.
15 yes, 0 nays.
Let the record reflect that by a vote of 15 to 0, proposed committee substitute for House Bill 1159 is reported favorably. Thank you and congratulations. Members, final comments from the members. Okay, Representative Edmonds moves that without further ado, we adjourn. See no further business. We are adjourned. Thank you, Representative Edmonds.